Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
You're listening to the QuickBook Reviews podcast. Brighten your day with a book.
Hello, my fellow bookworms. This is Philippa from QuickBook Reviews, author interviews and book reviews. We're here on a Friday again. Is it another Friday special, you may ask? Yes, it is another Friday special, I will tell you. And what a special this is. Because while I am booked, I think I'm now booked up for interviews until February 2025. So that's saying something. But when I get asked if there is space for a particular author, and I think it's a book you would like to hear about, then I say, OK, let's do a Friday special. And this had to be a Friday special because this is about a book by Helen Lederer. Now, Helen, I have followed so much. She's been in so many things that I have thoroughly enjoyed, and I'm thrilled to talk to her today. But Helen has written books, and she's got a new book out that I really enjoyed reading. It's called Not That I'm Bitter. It's talking about, yes, her life, about the different TV productions she's been in, from all the sort of names that you would expect, about her progression in her career. It's about how hard it is, actually, to be seen and be noticed. She's very honest. I just think it's a great read. And the reviews for this book are off the scale. I don't think I've come across a book recently with that high a level of review. So it's not just me thinking it. It's the world. But let me tell you a little bit about this book. What was it like as one of a handful of women at the heart of the write-on alternative comedy scene in the 1980s? Piece of cake, bit of a laugh, yes and no. It had its ups, but also its downs. Helen Lederer was a regular on the stand-up circuit and new wave sketch shows in the decade that launched the careers of today's comedy household names and national treasures. She shared stages with comedy pioneers like Ben Elton and TV screens with Dawn French, Jennifer Saunders, Harry Enfield and many others. From the iconic Absolutely Fabulous to Bottom, Happy Families, Naked Video, French and Saunders and Girls on Top. It is difficult to think of a comedy show that Helen wasn't a part of. From writing radio shows to performing on the West End, her wry, witty perspectives and her face are unforgettable. So plain sailing then? Well, not really. So it takes you from, I mean, she was a child of a Jewish Czech wartime refugee. She's had issues with her weight. She's had experiences as a mother. There's all sorts of things. It's moving, funny, really worthwhile reading, I'd say. Anyway, I've waffled, as always. I'll stop waffling and let's talk to Helen now. It is my huge pleasure to welcome to the podcast today the one and only Helen Lederer, whose latest book is called Not That I'm Bitter. Helen, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. I do love a podcast. I'm learning now. I love them. Yes.
I'm glad that you love them, because if you came on and said you hated them, that would be,
bad.
Not quite
not
the starting
good.
Point. Yeah, I love this book. It made me smile. It made me sad. It made me feel uplifted. It made me realise that there is so much more that goes on behind the scenes and when you're struggling. It's hard being involved in TV and writing and comedy. But let's just start. For those who haven't read Not That I'm Bitter yet, could you give us a bit of a summary of it?
Yes, I will. And that's interesting that there's run the gamut of that, because Not That I'm Bitter as a title was hopefully double meaning that, and when I say to people, I'm going to call my book Not That I'm Bitter, the people who kind of knew me laughed, meaning there's a kind of knowingness that actually I'm not bitter, but I am going to go there because why wouldn't I at this stage in my life? So it's a look at my life. Why am I funny? The pain and the joy of that, needing to have hysteria in my life. I've ended up concluding that perhaps I am a bit different, but luckily the climate now is that we can embrace differentness more easily than in my school, Blackheath High School for Girls. We're not comfortable with anyone who didn't conform. So it's that, and then the obviously family stuff, but very much relating to the iconic 80s and 90s TV programs that I was in, because I do believe that we all anchor ourselves to comedy programs growing up. So there's a kind of profound, hopefully, connection for some. I am niche. And then I began as a stand-up, so I talk about that. And then I get through to the end where I set up Comedy Women in Print. But it is interesting. I've just spoken to Graham Norton. I'm just recovering. And it is interesting talking to other people who are a bit younger than me, but to see what vibe comes across from people who haven't been in the business and people who are in the business. Do I come across as hard done by or bitter? You see, I don't think I do, because my desire is to make people laugh. The hope of this book is to have a comedy narrative that whatever it is, I want to find it funny. Not force it, but I genuinely find things funny. So that the purpose of the book was to write a funny narrative, but with less pretty bits in it, because that's funny as well.
But I'm amazed with everything that you've had to contend with, both personally and professionally, how you haven't turned into, I mean, I would just be raging all the time. And yet you channeled that into comedy. Mm.
It's interesting because I think you're a younger person and then people will look at the time then. I talk about things happening when I was 20, when I was 30. I went to drama school like late, 28, 27, I can never remember which year. But the things one does then through those and that, and as a 40-year-old, let's say, are different. And then now the questions I'm asked as I talk about the book, it's really, I'm learning, what society do we have now? I mean, do young people even have sex? I don't know. I mean, there's a kind of more boundary aware. But on the other hand, surely humanity cannot have changed that much, the good and the bad. And because I still dye my hair and I'm still kind of cracking on, I probably don't feel the age I am. And when I wrote about how it was then, it just so happened I was passionate about being a stand-up comedian, because that was the description. I just wanted to write and perform, but it was called a comedian because you had to be announced in some way. And it happened at that time that other women largely were not doing that. And so if you want to do something and you, when you have that burgeoning ambition in your 30s, for me anyway, that's how I started. I kind of gave up. I was a very bad social worker. I did the old sociology degree to please my parents, and not entirely that. But, you know, so coming from someone who doesn't have a huge amount of self-esteem, but also has a kind of strange ego, so a big ego and a small ego, somehow I kind of navigated my way to where I've ended up. Yeah.
But I mean, I'm in my 50s, so I grew up with these comedy programs. Mm. And it's ridiculous to admit it, but the sort of view is, if you are perceived as being famous, as you are, if you are in all these brilliant programs, everything is okay. I don't know why that is, but...
Yes, I know, I understand that. I have that feeling because when I look at the sort of... When you're at school, you look at the sixth form and I'm in the middle year in terms of status. And that is quite funny. I mean, maybe if I was higher, I wouldn't have to be as revealing. But I do see that I was given opportunities to be in those iconic programs. But when you're doing it, You don't go, oh, I'm in an iconic program. You just go, okay, I've got to be there at 9 o'clock and do that and behave well and hopefully do a good job. But I think that's kind of human condition as well. But so, yeah, I'm learning a lot through the feedback. I'm hoping that the narrative really, like when I wrote my novel, that I kind of came to writing late and I just wanted to transfer all the kind of angst from being a stand-up with the angst that I experienced of doing the gigs into, if I can get humor on the page, that would make me, if my mother was alive, she'd just go, stick with that. Because having seen the turmoil, really, and there are some people who do it now who are so brilliant and embrace it. But for me, the anxiety always went with the performing and I didn't question it or even resent it. That's just how it is. But writing is a joy. But now it's out, I'm thinking, oh my Lord, what are people thinking? Yeah, it's quite nerve-wracking because it is alarmingly honest, is it not? This is the problem.
It is alarming. No, it's not a lot. It's honest. And that's what we want. I think there are a lot of memoirs around now and you can tell when one has been ghostwritten or they're just doing it so that they can say they've published a memoir. Whereas yours, I mean, we were saying before I hit the record button that my copy of the book arrived as a PDF attachment. So I was having to read it on the computer, which I do not like doing. Yet I wasn't leaving my screen because I just wanted to read more and learn more. And the reviews, Helen, I don't know if you've been looking, but this is one of the most highly rated reviewed books I've come across in a long time. People are loving it.
I mean, because it's only just out and you're part of a game now, aren't you? Because you have to be part of are people buying the books? And I think it's a hardback and people don't have a lot of spare cash and go to Sainsbury's, it's cheaper in Sainsbury's. But and I'm going to book events and some literary festivals. So I don't know what is normal. I don't think I'm going to be one of those, a bestseller, because I think I'm just too niche, too individual. And maybe this is a slow burn. But I mean, I am delighted that it does, if it has, it works on a few levels. Like it can show how comedy was. I talk about the role of women. And as you kind of said, you read it and how it was unusual for a woman didn't do the punchline. I mean, not in a boring text way, like grown up, let's study stand up for a PhD module. It's not that. But a little bit of that contextualizes how it was difficult to get a commissioner to accept your work, particularly when the elites were already being championed and brilliantly. But in those days, another woman would be seen as a duplicate unless I was very bad. And I don't think I was very bad. But it is interesting. I just wanted to be as honest and as dry as I could be and just bring the reader with me as if I was just talking to you in a pub, which is my favorite thing to do with anyone. Yes. But, you know, talking about ghostwriters, I had a wonderful journalist, Marcus Field, who came round to the house with his tape recorder because I could not remember where to begin, how, because it's not chronological. And at the front of the book, should you ever, I'll have to send you a free one, a gratis one now. But there's a sort of passive aggressive CV in the front and the back, where Marcus really helped me noting, oh, in 1981, I did that. That 82, I did that. Which year? Because in those days before the internet, I wasn't probably mentioned in the cast of certain comedy programs or on TV. So it's been useful for me to just collect it up. So at my age now, I go, oh, I was there. I didn't stay there, but I did do that. Yeah, and that was what it was like.
But it's very interesting. It made me think back to when I was at primary school. My parents went to meet the teachers and they said, oh, Philippa is the school clown. Really, she shouldn't be doing that.
Oh.
And I think for the next 40 years, I stopped celebrating the humour. And it just, so your book resonated with me on that level. Not that I've gone through what you've gone through, but women, there was a time, you know, but you shouldn't be class, funny. Yeah, if I'd been a boy,
that's right,
it would have been fine.
That's right. So you have funny bones. So you found that way of looking at the world. And not everybody does. And I'm not saying it's good or bad, but I recognize it in other people. And I'm sure you do. And in the class, as I say, there were two large girls in our class. And Pamela Kemp wasn't funny, but we were both large. So I was large and funny and with asthma, which kind of made me retreat because I miss a lot of school. So I got quite inventive about games. So obviously people quite liked me in break because I'd come up with some good ideas of things, of games. But there is the thing of showing off. Obviously my mother, I was told I must, a lot of it was stop showing off, Ellen. And then one is mortified because as a human being, you do want to be I am a people pleaser. So there's absolutely lots of layers that you, we relate to, isn't it?
Yeah. But you say the book's niche. I don't wish to disagree with you as you are the author of the book, but I am going to disagree with you, Helen, because I think anybody that's interested, yes, in women, but in comedy and in history and in, yes, 80s, 90s TV, but also current TV and just the price of fame, what you don't realise is going on in people's lives when they're on our screens. I don't think it's niche at all. I think this is a book for everyone and for book clubs as well to really discuss it.
I would, when I did it, and I do wonder why I did it, I would love that because this process now is we're in a maelstrom of comments about our own society, our own behaviour. We're full on now. We had feminism in the way I understood it in the 80s, but it's very different now. And I would love it to be a book that you can go, this is someone's story, and that turn of phrase connected with that reader because of just to bring people into a life that where I didn't get things right all the time and obviously got regrets, but who doesn't? But also, yeah, saying about the famous people. It was quite a difficult line to tread because I've such regard for the famous people, but I always knew my place. And that's not poor me, but I just factually did know my place. So I hope that it's quite an objective book, that not that there's a pecking order of fame and nobody's mean to each other, but people prefer to mix with the most famous in our society. And that's quite natural. You don't want to mix with the year below you at school, do you? It's a bit, ooh, loser. Huh? I do find that maybe that's where the not that I'm bitter cheek comes in. But I'm sure that most of us in hierarchical jobs will relate to that. It's just looking at it through these eyes.
But I think fame is a particular, it's just a very interesting concept that we all sit there forming our own ideas about what it is to be famous and how that is the end goal. Everyone wants to be famous, and actually there's a lot
that's
to deal
though
with.
But it's interesting because in my day, like, they didn't have the not that it's good or bad, but reality TV wasn't a thing, and influencers weren't a thing, and people have a lot wider possibilities of becoming known. The thing is still the same. I just wanted to write and perform, and it's kind of, a lot of us don't get to do what we want to do. Like, a lot of us have to do jobs to earn money, which I also do. But fame, yes, it's an interesting question. I don't think it's a goal in itself, although I may be being a bit disingenuous with that. But yes, you're right to challenge me in there. Yeah, I'll have to go into a confessional and work out what I really think. Yeah.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Now, feel free to say no, but would you mind reading us a little bit from the beginning of the book? We'd love to hear
from
a
the
little
beginning.
Bit.
I love it because at the beginning of each chapter, I kind of scene set in italics just to enable the reader to understand that it's slightly different. So chapter one is called Muff Dive, Swimming Frock, Camel Toe, Fat. I'm standing on a diving board with my arms in the air looking at a red light. A producer is lurking hundreds of feet below me, looking worried. She calls up. You're not showing enough, I hiss back. It's been agreed. No camel toe. But the producer wants more. Do not dive until the red light goes out, she says, adding, and look scared, but in a funny sort of way. A few weeks before, I'd been shopping for Christmas gifts when my agent rang. I've been asked if you want to do a reality TV show. I put my bath bombs back on the counter. Someone wanted me for a job. This felt pleasant. The agent was still speaking. And they want you to dive. This, let's dive? Where? Water. I had no idea if I could dive. I didn't even know I could jump into a pool. I'd got into the habit of luring myself in by the steps in the shallow end to protect my highlights. Why? Because it's Splash. A new diving show with Tom Daly. Everyone has to dive. Can't I still be in it and not dive? No, they've already got Jo Brand. Why? What's she doing? Judging. Of course she was. And it was with a dull sort of sadness that I knew I would now have to dive in public for money. The red light goes out. I tip myself forward and make myself fall into nothingness.
Brilliant. Thank you, Helen. That's just such a wonderful opening chapter and does set the scene. And yeah, I could just. I'm glad it wasn't me on that diving board.
Well, quite high, especially you get vertigo in slingbacks, as I would say. 3 metres is blooming high. But and I think everyone was a bit anxious, like, is she going to effing do it? But with the help of a hypnotist in Tunbridge Wells, God knows why we ended up there, because that's where he lived probably. I did dive. But now I feel odd in lifts. There's a consequence to everything. Never think you can get away with doing something a bit out there. There's always a consequence. Anyway.
Something else that you're very passionate about that is wonderful is the Comedy Women Imprint Prize. And that's been going on a few years now.
It has. And I remember when I wrote my novel, the only novel thus far, Losing It, I looked around for a prize to win, as you do. And there wasn't one for witty women's fiction. And because I'd done some judging, and I am an ideas person, rightly or wrongly, which can get me into trouble because some don't work. This one did work because there wasn't any other prize that existed. I then spent the next 6 years doing it, but it does exist. And we are going again in 2025. And we are going to announce the dates in October of this year. And it will be exciting to celebrate and recognise witty women's fiction and enable unpublished writer to become published, because there are so many brilliant, talented writers out there not able to break into the system. So to be duly judged means that the standard will be reliably high. And Yeah, we've got actually about 27 people have become published because of Quipped. Got to boast. I know it's unseemly, but that's what we've done.
No, that's brilliant. So anyone in the middle of writing a book now, any women, get writing it and get on with it, because this prize the next one will be announced, as you say, in October, and then the actual results will be announced next year.
Yes, exactly. It'll be 2025.
This ties in very nicely with the question I ask authors about book recommendations. And if you could give us three book recommendations, Helen.
Yes, I love Michelle Gallen. She is an Irish writer and she was shortlisted with A Big Girl, Small Town, which I think is really funny. I like funny titles. No, not just funny titles. Obviously, there's more. And then she won the last prize. And in fact, at the event, she didn't think she was going to win. So she was going off to the loo and somebody yanked her back going, oh, no, I think you should just stand here and listen to the results, Michelle. But she is a marvelous writer, really rude, really feisty. She sets her story in Derry, the story of Magella. She's left school. She's waiting for exam results. She gets a job in a factory making shirts. And there's the mix very much of the troubles of the two religions working together. And it is hilarious and bold. And because I don't judge the prize, the comedy people just loved the mix of historical input, but with this sort of fearless, bold dialogue. Or it's a brilliant book. It's a brilliant book, Factory Girls. I'd recommend it highly.
Lovely. Thank you. Book number two.
Right. So this one is got the new voice award, Wahala by Nikki May. And that's really exciting because this is a different kind of book again. It's a collective of three friends, three best friends in their 30s, all Black women, mixed Nigerian and English heritage. And apparently the word Wahala it means trouble.
Yeah.
But again, it's the warmth. That's the narrative. It's the relatability. It's the connect. We have to connect. And then a fourth friend comes into their midst and they all get into trouble. But what's exciting about Wahala is that this first novel has been optioned for a BBC drama. And you just go, hey, there are witty women writers out there, very different, writing, connecting content. And this is something we need more of and a wider range of to start redressing the imbalance.
Mm-hmm. Yes, quite. Thank you. And your third book?
The third book is great fun. Thank you for letting me do this because I'm excited about it. The Book of Witty Women is an anthology. You cannot go wrong with an anthology. You're going on holiday, you go, right. If you don't like one story, you just move to the next. Not that you won't, but the Book of Witty Women are the winners of the Short Story Prize last year. And therefore, again, judged by comedy practitioners, you just look at the titles. The titles are quite surreal. Short-term funeral planning, accidental death of a hamster, family party gone AWOL, old people's choir, narcoleptic biscuit lover. That was the winning one. Con artist with a twist. We had a wonderful story from Josie Long. And then brilliant writer, Cathulette, Lucy Vine, Sadia Manier. They guest wrote. But I think you've just got, what should we say, a potpourri demonstrating that women's short story can be satirical, farcical. It's reliably funny. In a very mixed way. So you can't, what's not to like, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will put all those books in the show notes for anyone interested. They can find all the details there. Helen, we come to the last question, and it kind of relates to one of the titles of the stories in the Book of Witty Women that you've just mentioned. But it is a question I ask every author, and it is the most important one on this podcast. And it concerns the subject of biscuits. And it is, what biscuit powered the writing of Not That I'm Bitter? What is your biscuit of choice? Yeah.
My biscuit of choice is an excellent question. A Bourbon. It would have to be a Bourbon. When I was young, we had penguin biscuits in the tin. I think I wrote about that. And in a thing called the larder, which we had, which is just a room with food in it. And I do remember trying to open the tin to get the wrap penguin biscuit out and snuck it up to my room. But a Bourbon, which we also had growing up, is a very comforting, crispy mix. There's more to it because it's double layered. It's got a filling. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot going on in a Bourbon.
Someone I recently interviewed described a Bourbon as a naked penguin.
Oh, that's quite interesting. Oh, right. Yeah. That feels strangely lacking. No, that's... Oh, but it hasn't put me off, though. That hasn't put me off. No, a naked... Yes, there's something about that. Yes, but maybe being naked is not lacking. Let's celebrate that.
Yes,
element.
We accept all approaches. But no, Helen,
we do all comers.
Yeah, it's just been such a joy to talk to you and hear more about your brilliant book. Not That I'm Bitter, Helen Lederer. Thank you so very much.
I've loved talking about myself. Ask me back.
And that's it. I'm going to send you on your way. I hope your day is treating you well. I hope you have some nice things to look forward to. And please, just whatever you're dealing with, don't be too hard on yourself. Good things are round the corner. Anyway, just look after yourselves and I'll talk to you very soon. Take care now. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the QuickBook Reviews podcast. That's enough books, said no one, ever. See you again soon.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.